So did I tell you about like how excellent I was as the DJ? I crushed it.
You'd play a song and then you'd be like, "Oh, did you see that?" And when people were dancing,
I was
like,
so happy with myself. Yeah. Like, "Oh, this is amazing! I got one person on the dance floor."
One is better than none.
That's
I don't
correct.
Know if you've heard that.
It's pretty embarrassing. I played "Jump Around" by House of Pain. It cleared the whole dance floor. Not a single person danced to it.
Really? So your theory about ridiculous. The groomsmen losing their crap and dancing to
would.
That song? No,
I misread the room. Hmm. They were like 21 years old. They were they weren't even a glint in their mother's eye.
So maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's like a.
They probably were
thing?
Like, "Who is this band that's doing asking me to jump around the whole time?
I don't want to come and get down.
I don't even want to get on my seat and jump around.
I don't." I don't.
Why did that sound like a Dr. Seuss voice?
Could you imagine House of Pain
as
Dr.
Seuss?
Oh, man. We should do that.
Yeah, that would be spectacular. Okay, so I want to welcome everybody who's listening to a special episode. This was something that was not originally planned here in season two.
We like to be flexible.
But we do like to be flexible. So podcast listeners, we have a very exciting on-site interview we did with a group of folks, the biggest group we've ever had of three on a podcast from the United Negro College Fund. They were... pretty phenomenal guests. So we thought we would showcase this particular interview with you. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I'm the program manager of CFD, and this is
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the CFD.
And we both went up to the Columbia Tower in Seattle.
Yeah.
On the 35th floor overseeing the Puget Sound, which was super cool.
Yeah.
And we sat down with three different individuals from the United Negro College Fund.
Yeah, Linda Thompson Black. Mm-hmm. Vonzell McDowell, mm-hmm. and Shelby Avery.
And we had a really incredible discussion about historically black colleges and the role of education in the black community and what youth in the black community need to focus on.
Yeah.
Oh, it just hit a range of different topics. And so we're not going to take up too much of your time just talking about ourselves. We're actually going to dive into the interview.
This time?
Yeah. But you do have a question of the pod.
I do.
So why don't you hit me with that?
Okay. Philip Kerrigan.
Yes.
If you yourself could give a scholarship to college-bound students, mm-hmm. what ridiculous expectation would you require?
Ridiculous expectation?
Yeah. Would you have something that's ridiculous?
Well, I mean, it's me. So yes, I would have a ridiculous expectation.
Boom.
Okay. Let's see. It might be something involving my meals.
Oh, yeah? Like, I need you to make
I will
meals.
Require you to make my meals.
Like five-star caliber meals?
Yeah, Michelin star.
Okay.
What else is there?
See, I was thinking about that where I was like, yeah, it'd probably be something about food, but it'd probably be like, okay, whoever fits the most grapes into their mouth at once, you get the scholarship.
So I think so. So I will say that, like, one thing that my parents did might feel like it's ridiculous because your mom and dad are not supposed to do that to you, but it actually helped me a bunch was I was deciding which college I was going to go to. Mm-hmm. I'd gone to 1 year of PLU, and it was becoming cost prohibitive. I wasn't gonna be able to afford it anymore.
Yeah.
So we stumbled onto the Evergreen State College, which is down in Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom and dad sat me down and said, "Hey, look, to go to school is only $9,000 a year. $9,000 a year, by the way, in 2004.
Uh-huh.
That's adorable.
That is.
And they said, "We are willing to pay for your going to college as long as you graduate within 4 years. If you don't graduate within 4 years, then you owe us all the money plus interest."
Okay.
And I, as any 19-year-old would do in college, blew the first year. Like, I just failed miserably. And then by the end of the second year, I was like, man, I am going to have to nail every single class from here on out if I'm going to graduate within 4 years.
And not have to pay back interest
and
all
interest
this money.
Right. So fast forward to the, I'm like 4 credits shy.
Sure.
And I'm finishing up the final spring quarter of my senior year.
Uh-huh.
And I go to the folks at Evergreen and I say, I only need 4 credits. I'm going to do it over the summer. Can I walk, you know, in graduation? Yeah. And they said, as long as you sign up for the class ahead of time, we'll let you walk and we'll just hold your degree officially until you're done. Right. Yeah. So I got to walk. My mom was all, it was one of the only times she's like literally cried in anything that we've ever done. It was really
your
cool.
fault.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool. I get into this class, this summer class. It's like America in the 1950s and 60s or something like that. It's this grizzled old Evergreen teacher.
Yeah.
And then me.
Yeah.
And then 2 other students. It's a class of 3.
Wow.
So he looks around the room and he goes, you know, I mean, I don't know if we really need to do this. You know, should we just like, maybe we just not do it. And the guy couldn't get up fast enough. The one kid, he was like, boom, I'm gone.
Yeah.
Right. The girl like hung for like 2 weeks and then finally like lost interest. I looked him in the face and I said, I don't even need you to show up here. I will be in this class every Tuesday and Thursday for the next 6 weeks. Yeah. Just come the last week and give me full credit.
Yeah.
But it was by far the coolest class I've ever taken because it was just me and him.
Yeah.
Like, we just BS'd the whole time, and he gave me all these really cool things. But I would say something like that. Like, we're going to give you this scholarship, but if you don't finish in X amount of time... Then you're on the hook. I don't know.
Okay.
Just a thought.
Well, that's very reasonable in a way. I mean, it's not like...
Thank you.
...fitting as much food into your mouth as possible.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Was I supposed to be more ridiculous?
I got it. I covered it. Okay. I'm good.
Okay, sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It's funny, because we said we wouldn't ramble, and now we have. And now we're going to toss you directly to the interview with the United Negro College Fund. These guys were awesome. Pay attention, people. Okay, here we go. So we are actually in the Columbia Tower on the 35th floor, overlooking Puget Sound. That's kind of awesome. We're here with folks from the United Negro College Fund. Why don't we, since we have so many people in this room, why don't we go around the room and everybody introduce yourself and give your title, starting over here.
Great. Thank you for being here. My name is Linda Thompson-Black. I'm the Area Development Director for the United Negro College Fund. That includes Washington, Oregon, and Alaska.
Hi, I am Shelby Avery. I currently work for Ford Motor Company as a sales zone manager. I am on the UNCF Leadership Council, as well as the communications co-chair, and I am a past UNCF scholar. I graduated from Florida A&M University. I'm a 2-time grad. I received my bachelor's in business administration, marketing, and then I also received my master's in business administration.
All right. Wow.
My name is Von Zell McDowell, and I'm the Portfolio Project Coordinator and the Black College Fair Coordinator.
Awesome. So, Linda, let's start off with the simple question. Can you give us a little history of the United Negro College Fund and what it is that you guys do for the community?
Great. So the United Negro College Fund was established in 1944. It was established when African Americans were not afforded the opportunity to have admission to predominantly white institutions. Mm-hmm. We have been a long-standing, continuous educator in the United States since 1944. For example, in my family, my dad moved here from Tulsa, Oklahoma, but he went to Grambling University, which is a HBCU, and he went to Tuskegee University. He was right below the Tuskegee Airmen. He was a pilot, and then became a principal.
Yeah.
That opportunity for education allowed him to move to the Pacific Northwest and then contribute here. And many people in Washington got their start in the 50s by going to an HBC and then coming to work for Boeing or the shipyards.
Yeah.
So my daughter went to Howard Law School. She's from Seattle, but she went to Howard Law School.
Nice.
My son-in-law went to Xavier. It's an HBCU. Mm-hmm. He's now a surgeon. So when you talk about the contribution of HBCUs, we have about 60,000 students annually in HBCUs.
Mm-hmm.
We graduate about 8,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
While we educate 3% of all African American students who are going to college, we graduate 20% of the STEM students.
Wow.
and about 27% of students generally.
Oh, wow.
So we're hugely successful with first-time college-going mm-hmm. students, mm-hmm. and we outstrip all educational institutions in helping African-Americans yeah. complete college. Yeah.
So for those who may not know, HBCU, what does it stand for?
It stands for Historically Black Colleges and Universities.
There you go. Awesome.
And when you're thinking about ways to give back and to contribute, this is one of the single most transforming opportunities, a college education.
Right.
It affords the opportunity to get a job, make a living wage, and support your family. And we know that we really appreciate our supporters, and we want to expand. We want to reach out to new ones and to share this opportunity with them.
Awesome. So this might be a good question for Vonzell. Can you talk a little bit about some of the ways you help kids get into college? Because you mentioned one of the things you do is you're almost like a college boot camp, essentially. You get kids prepared. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so like I said, I coordinate this program that we have called the Portfolio Project. So this is year 13 for us. So basically what that is, it's an 11-week college preparatory boot camp. So we have four large sites with which we're in partnership with other nonprofits and community members, et cetera, where they host our Saturday sessions for our students. And within these 11 weeks, students we prepare them with a series of different skill sets that they'll learn, as far as like essay writing 101, finding out what college fits them best, social media etiquette, financial literacy. We also provide a practice PSAT test and ACT testing, mm-hmm. Which is due to our partnership with the Princeton Review. So we try to give them a lot of the skill sets that they need that they may not be getting in high school. And then at the end of the 11 weeks, they would have created this business professional portfolio for themselves with a cover page, transcripts, accolades, etc., which they can use for college recruiters, or if they're interested in just going to get a job, it's something that they can add to their toolbox.
Cool. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's more prep than most people get for high school, you know, right, going from high school to college. That is incredible. So as far as the current climate, like we're in 2018, United States, what does it look like for any African-American who is aspiring to go to college? What does it look like right now, the climate out there?
While we have grown since the 1944 when we started UNCF, because of the cost of college, the declining contribution of state governments, mm-hmm. And debt, student debt mm-hmm. load,
yeah,
we're seeing the numbers go down. And that is a huge challenge, and that's why scholarships and the work that we do are so essential. For HBCUs, only 1 in 10 students who apply can attend because of financial reasons.
Wow.
So that is significant.
Yeah.
And we still have a huge gap between minority student enrollment and predominantly white student enrollment. The gap is about 14%. I think 33% of African Americans have a 2-year college, and then 50% of. And so it is. We're not where we need to be.
Yeah.
When we know that 65% of the jobs in our country are going to be require post college.
Yeah.
Right. So we are, but there is opportunity there. If we can refocus our attention and commitment, we can help more kids go to college. And I think we want prosperity, and mm-hmm. this is a powerful tool to achieve that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna piggyback off of Linda too. From my own personal experiences, just like peers that I know and et cetera. I think this day and age, a lot of children or the younger generation are intimidated to be intelligent.
Mm,
so
that's a great point.
I just say that, you know, don't be afraid to express your intelligence, you know, and a lot of people, they're afraid to ask for help, you know,
yeah.
So don't, you know, I feel like that is something we kind of have to remind a lot of the younger kids.
I feel like that is an excellent point, because I always think that, like, we've gone almost a culture of being smart, being well-read, knowing facts, is like suddenly that you have to have an allergy to it in order to be socially acceptable. I just feel like I completely agree with that notion.
Yeah. And I think that by going to college campuses and becoming aware of HBCUs, they're mm-hmm. full of people who are minority, look like them, who are committed to right. their education. Right. And it's transforming, and particularly in the Pacific Northwest, where you may not have that opportunity yeah. to see right. that.
Now, does the United Negro College Fund work exclusively with historically black colleges and universities, or do you actually help folks get into colleges that that basically cater to all different races?
Thank you for asking that question, because it's a sometimes frequently not known answer. We advocate for college going. We have approximately 105 students currently who are funded through the Gates Foundation. And the majority of those students are going to schools in the Pacific Northwest yeah. or around the country. So the answer is you do not have to go to an HBCU mm-hmm. to receive our scholarships. And HBCUs are becoming increasingly diverse. There are more people mm-hmm. of diverse backgrounds going to HBCUs. About 20% of the student population is non-African American. Yeah. Yeah. So we want kids to go to college wherever they decide to go.
Sure. Awesome. And just to clarify, the core demographic you guys are serving is going to be high school kids or people who are like under 21?
Yes.
Okay. And yes. do you have any opportunities for anybody who's like an adult at this point to say, oh, I haven't gone to college, I'd like to go to college?
Absolutely. Now, so you can enroll in an HBCU uh-huh. at any point. Our particular portfolio program is preparing high school students.
Sure.
But this is an opportunity that's available. And currently we have a very robust partnership with Seattle Central Community College for a transfer program. You go, you get your 2-year AA degree, uh-huh. and then you can transfer to an HBCU and all of your credits transfer.
Nice.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And it's such a skill building opportunity. So you can enroll at the point that you are ready to attend college.
Awesome. How about your personal experience with the United Negro College Fund and how it helped you?
So my personal experience is very, very long with UNCF, and I've enjoyed the journey thus far. It definitely helped me get through college, and then also helped me get to where I am with working for Ford. I'm originally from the Midwest area. I graduated from high school in Plainfield, Illinois, and so going to Tallahassee, Florida, I was an out-of-state student. So the top priority for me was to continue to get scholarships. And so that was a really big thing for myself and my family. So even to the extent where my father, during his free time, he was helping me apply for scholarships and whatnot. And so one of the scholarships that he applied for me was through the UNCF. So he called me and he was like, all right, we got a scholarship. We got one more. Great. So I come home over winter break, and he says, you know that scholarship that you got? Well, it came with an internship. Oh. So this is my freshman year. I have never really worked. So I'm like, an internship? I thought I was going to come home and just chill over the summer. I was like, well, I guess I can have this internship. The internship was through Aldi, if you're familiar with yeah. The grocery store chain.
Yeah.
And so it was a great experience. And not only was I able to get the scholarship, I was also getting paid on top of the internship. So I was like, wow, I'm just a freshman. I have my first internship. That was a pretty big deal, because at SBI, our business school, School of Business and Industry at FAMU, you're required to have 2 internships to graduate.
Oh, wow.
So at that point, I was kind of on the fast track with my internships ahead of the game, because I was able to have one my freshman year. Usually only sophomores and juniors, that's when you start getting your internships. So after a successful summer with Aldi, I was like, man, I got to look on the UNCF website to see what other opportunities are out there. So my sophomore and junior year, those summers, I was actually working with Oracle in Reston, Virginia. Mm-hmm. So the UNCF has helped me build my resume. I was able to stay in school with my scholarships as well, too. working, I was able to purchase a car. That I'm extremely thankful for the opportunities that I've received through the UNCF. And so I moved out here in Seattle last year. So I've been out here for a year now. Wow, that's crazy. And so I got a email saying that the UNCF was sponsoring a college fair. I think it was in October or September around. Yeah, so sometime in the fall. And so I was like, oh man, the UNCF is coming to Seattle. Yeah. That's what I thought. And so I was like, oh great, let me go see who's coming from FAM, see if I can help out and whatnot. So I actually ran into an old classmate who was there working the FAMU booth. And so he was like, oh, let me put you in contact with the UNCF group here. So I was like, wow, they're here in Seattle? And so he put me in contact with Linda, and I was just like, how can I help out? So from that, that's brought me here, working with the UNCF through the Leadership Council and being on the Communications Committee, which I have enjoyed so much thus far.
Awesome. Awesome.
I just want to piggyback off of Shelby, too. So you guys don't know, but she also puts these really cool happy hour things together.
Tell us more. Tell us more.
So, yeah, she's been putting a lot of work in for the year, and I'm happy for her.
Well,
thank you.
And we like to say you get something out of UNCF whether you go there or not. And this is a prime example. Shelby was trained at FAMU, but she's working for Ford and living in the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we are so excited. We have over 400 programs in UNCF for scholarships, internships, you know, master's programs that nationally. So there's lots of opportunity to support young people.
Nice.
Excellent.
Okay, so we've talked with charities on our podcast before about how their clientele struggles to just get basic needs met and then grow beyond that just to survive and have better opportunities. So as far as you guys have experienced, whether it's personally or with the students you're helping, what kind of barriers are students really facing in order to get into college?
Well, what I think a lot of students are facing to get into college is, one, they're not informed. So we talk about accessibility. A lot of people may not have access to the internet or may not have access to certain resources that can inform them on where they may need to go or how to go about the process of applying for school. And I don't put blame on anyone, but that's just, I feel like that's an issue that can be fixed. But just how do we fix that? So I think as UNCF, our goal is to continue to be as resourceful as possible and making sure that our community, literally from Marysville down to Portland, Portland, Oregon, are informed on what UNCF is doing and how we're going about handling business.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we are excited. The previous year before last, we served 300 students at our college fair.
Yeah.
This last year, we served 1,200 students. 1,200 students came to get information, you know, about going to college. And I wanted to share an example. One of our students who was recognized this year, her mom became homeless due to domestic violence. Uh-huh. She lived in a storage facility unit for housing. And she made sure her daughter got the support of family. But this child who was going through so much came to our UNCF portfolio project every week. And she was awarded a scholarship on the spot at our Black College Fair by a college. So when we're meeting the needs of the most needy, as well as middle class students who don't do as well academically, African American students, as their white counterparts. Mm-hmm. Because of the history of lack of opportunity.
Yeah.
And so it's very exciting. It's very impactful. We're very successful. Vanzel, we from our portfolio project, it's approximately 80%?
Far as?
That graduate.
So our program completion rate, it's about 85%, 86% complete, 86% completion rate. So, you know, like I said, we have four large sites, and we like to make sure that all of our students, one, are committed and that they, you know, complete the program, you know, because once you complete it, then you
that just creates another window of opportunities for you. So
yeah, and you can put that on any kind of like resume, like I went to this program and I completed this whole course.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. I'd like to piggyback on something that Ronzel said earlier about just having access.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I do when I have a little bit of spare time is I go to a few high schools in the area just when they request to have different speakers come in, whether it's in regards to HBCUs or careers, because having a face to something really helps out.
Absolutely.
And so having people share their experiences with students and having them be able to talk to you about what they're going through and their experiences, and being able to give them real life examples of what you've gone through. And so if everyone can just do a little bit more of reaching out to students too, that goes a long way, just so they can have a face to what they want to do, their dreams and their goals and things of that nature.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. I have a question that I like to ask often of almost all of our charities who deal with specific issues within the community. And that is your optimism level. So do you see it getting easier, and do you see more kids in the Black community able to go to college than you have seen historically? Is it getting better or is it getting harder?
Well, it's a mixed bag, but in our world it's getting better because we are constantly working on helping kids go to college. Mm-hmm. We all feel really fortunate to be involved in this activity. Mm-hmm. It's a gift because we see the transformation in the kids that we work with. And what we want to do is invite people to help us. We want to thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk about this, because this is a success story. Mm-hmm. And if we contribute, we can reduce that 1 in 10 kids who we work with to, we'd like to get down to only, there's two mm-hmm. left, 8 out of 10 kids.
Right.
And we can do it. And we can particularly do it in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. Our numbers are reasonable. We can help almost any Black child go to college if we all pitched in together. Yeah. And that is one of my visions. I would love to see that happen. Mm-hmm. So I think we are on a positive trajectory working together. We're not where we want to be yet. There's room to grow. I know my dad used to say I'm the oldest living optimist, but I am, because I see, you know, what happens when we work together.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you guys?
Well, I would definitely agree with everything that Linda said. It's definitely a mixed bag, but I'm also a firm believer of reach one, teach one. Mm-hmm. And so if I come back to FAMU, because that's one of the reasons why I ended up at FAMU. I have a friend, he's like my older brother. And so he was going through FAMU's business program, their 5-year MBA program. And I was like, that's what I want to do. And so just having him set the example, and I was like, all right, I'm going to follow in his footsteps. And then I'm also going to go back to my community and kind of like spread the gospel of going to the HBCU or going to FAMU, where now I have a cousin, a younger cousin, who just finished up his first year at Hampton. So being that I'm able to experience that and then go back into my community and bring people forth, it's really helping in the long run, just with doing that on the base level.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that we can't be a pessimist. We always have to be optimistic. Mm-hmm. We can't let them see us showing that side, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of whatever it is, you know, we may be going through as an organization, mm-hmm. because students, you know, they're going to thrive off the energy we provide.
Yeah.
So I do think students are interested in looking to find ways to better educate themselves and taking the next steps. I really do see students not passing over, but also like adding a plan B to themselves, to their plans, as far as, you know, what it is that they want to do in case plan A don't work. And I always speak from like a student athlete perspective, mm-hmm. because, you know, that's the idea of what a African American student is, you know, or Black man, Black girl are in the community. So I do see it getting better. I do see them doing their end of it and doing the research and reaching out to mm-hmm. Organizations like us to better themselves and their families.
That's an interesting one, because athletics, of course, is what when we turn on the TV and we watch March Madness or we watch NCAA football or whatever we watch, I've got to imagine that the percentage of African-American kids on a team like that, like basketball, football, far outweighs, I would imagine, the number of white kids that are playing on that team. But then those kids, of course, you get this sense when like, it's like you get this sense like, oh, well, they're there because of the athletics, and are they going to get anything post that? Because only 1% of them, 0.5%, are going to make money professionally doing this. Are they getting the things they need at these colleges to go beyond that? Do you get a sense of that?
Yes. Okay. I get a sense of that for sure.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. That's awesome.
And yeah, as long as we have organizations like UNCF involved to make sure that we're there to kind of pick them up.
Yeah.
And let them know that, you know, there's other choices out there and you can just kind of add to your toolbox, then we'll be okay.
Yeah, cool.
And one of our pillars is advocacy, and I think and that's key, you know, letting people know about this opportunity. Mm-hmm. And there are 60,000 students who are in HBCUs annually. Mm-hmm. And we graduate about 8,000 a year. Mm-hmm. That is huge. When you think about it, just that alone,
yeah.
If we want to maintain that opportunity. But on the other hand, as we're saying, there is a decline in financial opportunity due to those issues that we discussed. So that's why I say it's a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. But where we sit, we're edging forward with the help of the community.
Awesome.
So when it comes to UNCF, as far as like partners in the community and getting access and education opportunities out there for students, I imagine that it's not just UNCF and say like high schools. What kind of other partnerships do you guys need or think that would be like the best benefit? Like, is it a community partnerships or there like legislation? Like, what other partnerships need to come to help not only you guys but also students get into college?
Well, I will start. We need people to know about and understand and support and advocate for that the efficacy of what we're doing. Uh-huh. We need volunteers and mentors. And we also have, in our portfolio project, we have community partners like the YWCA and the College Access Now, and we have corporate partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which are essential to us. They provide volunteers, mentors. They do sponsorships for our gala. So there's not really no one. And then our kids, they have needs.
Yeah.
So when Von Zell is working on the portfolio project, he's consistently partnering with different organizations and identifying resources to help our students to eliminate barriers for them to, you know, we provide transportation for them to get there. We provide a healthy lunch. Because they are hungry, they may not eat.
Yeah.
And so we need tutors, mentors, we need community support generally.
Yeah, we need people to step up and stop acting and act and have action.
Right.
For sure. Like, there's enough of just saying that they're gonna do something and actually put the groundwork in.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it comes from. So, and that's from corporate to nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
Community members as well. So enough talking. That's me.
Right.
I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to worry about it.
He's the one that is recruiting mentors for our beautiful young people.
Yeah. This podcast is all about talking. So but how many folks, it strikes me as a good question, how many folks are like Shelby who experience the United Negro College Fund in a way that is beneficial and then actually turn back around and become mentors and become people who connect after they're finished with everything? How do you experience a lot of like folks who basically become mentors as a result of the work you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. I do. And I think a lot of people like that kind of go through their own personal experiences with them, make them want to come back and share mm-hmm. the knowledge that they gained, because maybe their first generation in their family to go to college, and they have young, they have younger siblings, and they see okay, I don't want them to act this way, so they're gonna. That's kind of just the first stepping tool for them to kind of get their feet wet. Is like, okay, let me go back to the community I'm in to put that groundwork in, because that's not gonna just only help the community; it's gonna help me internally with my family to come. So,
yeah, exactly. It'll like change family trees essentially, right? Try as hard as you can.
Absolutely, and for example, we have wonderful. Partners where African Americans now work. So U.S. Bank, they provide volunteers for our Black College Fair.
Awesome.
And they're made up of some of the Black Employee Network group and then all in a broad and the broader community. We were recently down in Portland for our leadership council there. Intel has a substantial HBCU alumni group, and they are volunteering. And in Seattle, we have, you know, alumni group members that are from Amazon and Starbucks. And so there is, and there's great affinity and loyalty about the colleges they went to, you know, and they love them and they know what they meant to them.
This might be a question beyond you guys, because this is a beyond local issue. But obviously the conditions here in the Northwest are one way. Nationally speaking, in other areas, do you feel like the conditions for Black kids to be able to get to college, kids in the Black community to go to college, do you feel like it's different than the conditions up here?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, the density in a New York or Philadelphia or Baltimore, Chicago, Detroit is much higher. Poverty levels can be much higher. And so the opportunity to get through the gauntlet of high school with all the community issues is a challenge, and then to be prepared. So it is much different. The scale is different. And
Well, that brings up, go ahead. You were going to say something. Sorry.
I was going to say, piggybacking off of Linda, Seattle's different because it's really multicultural.
Right.
Yeah. So, compared to like the Baltimore,
people are closer here together, and it's, you know,
So it's really, you'll learn a lot about other cultures, and you know, it's really cultural.
Yeah,
you know, so we kind of have that different here.
This brings up another question. I'm sorry, Heather, I'm taking the microphone from you.
I do have one question
relevant to the topic. so sometimes we get the feeling for like Washington State, like how we are nationally. Do you guys think that, like, in as far as all 50 states go, I mean, are we like better able to meet needs for anybody in the African American community to go to college as opposed to like, say, maybe Florida or California or a different state?
Yes, we are. There are lists of states
Good
who
are interrupted me.
Not doing well at all, we're not on that list.
Okay.
But we still need to do more work in scoping in to increase the outreach to the African American community, and that's why we're asking people to support us, because we're highly effective in reaching out and getting the word out. You know, when we have our Black College Fair, young people know that's for them.
Yeah.
They have a Black College Fair? And so that's why we had 1,200 students who participated. So we are blessed to be in our Pacific Northwest bubble. I love it here. I grew up here. I'm from here. But we have a lot of work to do also. And we're seeing the, you know, demographic shift to Kent and Renton. So we're doing a lot in Tacoma of work in that area as well. So we're not out of the woods yet. I wish we were, and thank you for asking that. But we are, this is something you can invest in, and it's successful. And we will just, we will continue to, and our, the faces on our young people when they get this information, get these opportunities, it's something that you will enjoy for a lifetime. You won't forget it because they know that they, I am going to make something of my life. So I love the state of Washington. We do a lot on a lot of different levels, but we need greater support working with the kids that we target.
We're significantly blessed in Washington because, I mean, think about other states. We have Amazon, Microsoft, Boeing, Google, Facebook. It's a lot of Fortune 500 companies here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Fortune 500 companies have Black employee network groups, you know. So we're definitely privileged, you know, to have these corporations here, because think about it, like Shelby, a lot of students go to HBCUs, which are in the South or in the East Coast, mm-hmm. but then those corporations are recruiting those students to come work for them mm-hmm. On the West Coast. So, you know, we're going to continue to use those companies to our advantage too, because, you know, that's the benefit of having them here.
And
I just wanted to say that those companies are here, but opportunities like the one you're giving us helps people to understand we don't have access at the highest levels, and we really need to get greater support.
Yeah.
To see this as a viable opportunity and to get to know us and engage with us. So we're really asking for those companies to work with us. We have, you know, we're mm-hmm. starting our relationship, but we're wanting to serve more students.
Awesome. So I think I have one last question before we ask about, you know, how donations help your help your organization. And that is the question about high schools in the inner cities or in mostly minority communities. So one of the big things you always hear is how drastically underfunded they are, or how the curriculum is far different than it is in more affluent neighborhoods. With those sort of high schools, how much of a struggle is it for you to be able to try and get kids in those places to become successful and to get them to be able to go to college? Is it a real challenge?
It is. Yeah. Do you want to talk about your recruiting at first, and then I can come in?
Mm-hmm. Can I tell my personal experience?
Yes, you can. All
right. I'm a graduate of Rainier Beach High School, which is all right. in South Seattle. So at that time, it was you had students that were interested, and you had a lot more that were not. So it's kind of hard sometimes to make a kid's mind transition to what may be the next steps. Mm-hmm. But it's a challenge. Yeah, it could be fixed, but it's just like how do we switch the mindset,
right.
You know, and to, you know, not engaging in senseless violence and just taking that energy and using it to better yourself.
Okay, cool.
And when we're working to, our first group of kids are kids that may be struggling financially but want to go to college. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Then you have students who need help being prepared to go to college. Mm-hmm. And we work with high schools, a lot of high schools, they want their kids to succeed. Mm-hmm. But there is extra support in terms of tutoring, math. They need extra support for housing, basic housing and food and shelter. So it is not a monolithic group.
Yeah.
And if we still struggle for equity, as I know you know, in education.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so it's more resources are required mm-hmm. to support our students.
Yeah.
But we're working as a team. For example, we work with Garfield High School. They want their kids to go to school, and we have our college fair there. We target them. The Seattle Public Schools provided buses for all high schools to come to our mm-hmm. our fair.
Oh, wow.
And so it's tough. We have a waiting list. We have more kids who would like to come, but we're limited by laptops. Our kids need a laptop, and we only have a certain amount. If we had more, we could serve more kids.
Yeah.
So we have all of those issues in education, but I know that when we are student-centered and we are focused on helping kids go to college, we are going to get, we're getting those kids, mm-hmm. and we're trying to do everything we can. We're not stuck up on teacher education or all of that. That's important.
Yeah.
But we're helping kids go to college, right. and we can do we can send a whole lot more mm-hmm. if we have help. And no, they're not as prepared sometimes. UNCF and HBCUs are highly effective in training first-time college goers, mm-hmm. and so that are coming from those not as equipping schools. And I don't like to, schools have a lot of work to do, but they need a lot of help too.
Yeah.
And so I consider us to be helpers.
Yeah.
And we're really effective helpers.
Awesome. All right.
So let's say somebody hears the podcast and they want to start giving to United Negro College Fund. Can you guys talk about what donations do for your organization?
Yes. So donations help fund scholarships. They help more kids go to college. Donations help our historically black colleges and universities to remain innovative, mm-hmm. and to sustain them. And they also support our portfolio project, which is our college preparation program, and to go through that application process. When they're done, they have at least one completed application, at least one scholarship, and the portfolio that Von Zell talked about. So when you, those are the areas that we target our funds to when you donate to UNCF.
Very nice.
And before we wrap up, do you guys have any events or fundraisers or promotions you guys want to promote that are coming up or big ones that happen throughout the year for you?
We'd love to. Gonzalo, right. You want to talk about Portfolio Project and Black College Fair?
Yeah, sure. So the Portfolio Project, like I said, the online application is open now. So that will be for graduating high school students graduating class of 2019-2020. You can apply online at scholarship.uncf.org. Once again, scholarship.uncf.org. Also, the Portfolio Project has a CrowdRise. Mm-hmm. CrowdRise funding. Let me get that correct. CrowdRise fundraising page. Sorry. And you can go to CrowdRise and just look up UNCF Portfolio Project. And all those proceeds go directly to our program, which will help, you know, help us fund the feed kids, help us with transportation, help us with buying technology that's needed. The program's amazing. Like I said, we have four large partners that we use, including Swedish Hospital, the YMCA in both Tacoma and in Marysville, College Access Now, which is in Seattle, and then also an organization called the Leisure Hour Junior Golf Program, which is in Portland, Oregon, and they teach low-income and minority students how to play golf.
Oh, wow.
So it's a really phenomenal program. It's the only program of its kind mm-hmm. in the whole country.
Wow.
Nice. So UNCF is doing great things, and we just look forward to having the support from all of our community members, corporate to nonprofit. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, cool.
And we have a gala. It's going to be February 16th, mm-hmm. 2019. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of fun.
Okay.
We have a good time. We dance. We raise funds. We give out scholarships. I'm inviting the two of you. You guys should come. And we would like to invite all of our supporters. We endeavor to be one of the largest workplace campaigns and have you be with us and build on this, and
awesome.
it's really fun. We focus on it being fun. Yes, we want to meet our financial goals, mm-hmm. but it's a time for us to come together as community and celebrate what we do. Awesome. So February 16th, 2019, we'd love to see you at the Hyatt in Renton.
Awesome. And I heard happy hours. What's happening there?
Yes, please. Big story. So I went to one, and Shelby, first I got the flyer the day before.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, well, okay, let me go check it out. I walk in, it was a full party.
All right.
She's like, well, I didn't know this many people were coming. And I'm like, yeah, you did.
So DJ, I really did not know.
It was a fun time, though. So go ahead.
That's awesome.
Well, outside of everything else that I do, I throw a happy hour every first Friday. And so the happy hours are targeted to, but not limited to, young black professionals. Mm-hmm. And so one of the big things about moving to Seattle or far away from home is having that sense of community and meeting people. A lot of HBCU grads, so we come together, and it's just great to see everyone come together once a month. We call it the Culture Shock Happy Hour.
Awesome.
So it's been doing very well.
Yeah. Where is it at?
So
or is it like a traveling happy hour?
It is, because being new to Seattle and just having someone show you the ropes in a type of way. So we try to go to different hot spots in Seattle. So we've been to Art Marble 21, mm-hmm. Sugar Hill, Monkey Loft, mm-hmm. the Taste of the Caribbean, places like that. So just showing people around Seattle, different communities, and that's why I love to invite Vonzel so he can meet new people and we can get people on board with the UNCF and things like that.
I'm happy Shelby did something like that. And there's a lot of other people that have happy hours, and I'm thankful they do stuff like that, because if you know, Seattle is a sense of, is community here. There's always been community here. So it's like when we have new people that move in, it's like we want to welcome you. And sometimes it can be tough to blend like a Seattle light with someone that's moving here.
Right.
You know, you hear a lot about the Seattle freeze.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm gonna break the Seattle freeze. So, come hang out. It's cool. It's always good to interact and to grow in families.
So, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And then while I'm still on the mic, just a quick communications plug.
Yeah.
The UNCF Seattle does have an Instagram page, which is the UNCF_PacificNW. And then you can also find us on Facebook, which is the UNCF-PNWA.
Cool. Well, this has been an awesome conversation. We really appreciate you inviting us up to your glorious building. And
keep it a secret, though.
I know.
Thank you, Bank of America, for our glorious spot.
Yeah, this is awesome. We really appreciate having a really awesome, honest conversation about just basically school access and all that sort of stuff. So we really appreciate it. Vonzel, Shelby, Linda, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
All right. All right, so that was our fantastic interview with the trio from the United Negro College Fund. There's so much in that.
Yeah.
In that interview, in that discussion.
We could have talked forever.
For real. I mean, we could have just set the mics and kept going. There was just so much there.
Mm-hmm.
And for those folks who think that you know something about a particular issue like race relations or, you know, the Black community and education.
Yeah.
You don't. you really need to ask more people about their experience when it comes to this sort of stuff.
Well, it kind of makes sense, though. Like, if you don't experience something, you don't know how it works. Mm-hmm. Like, you have an outside perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like that's a problem in this country in general right now. We have a lot of people making a lot of assumptions about a lot of other people.
And they have no idea.
Without having ever experienced any of it.
Or even talked to anybody who would have.
Yeah. And what you recognize after talking with folks like Linda and Vonzel is how nuanced the discussion actually is.
Yeah.
You heard him talk about, you heard Linda in one breath talk about access and how there's still problems with access specifically in the South and in other places around the country, but Seattle's struggling with it too. They're doing okay. And so there's your standard sort of like, how do we get this community to get more uplifted, to get more educated? Mm-hmm. Is the system letting them down?
Yeah.
Those sort of things. And then literally you have Vonzel talking about how even in his own community, there needs to be a better emphasis on being smart and being well-read and
not
like
not being afraid to be educated,
not being afraid to be smart.
Know. Yeah.
So that to me is where you get that sort of nuanced discussion that we just have decided in this country we are not interested in having anymore.
Yeah.
I think that's so tragic.
I also do find like it is a small world. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
And like when Shelby was talking about her experience, she's like, I'm from the Midwest. Yeah. And at that moment I was like,
I know, right?
Yeah.
I know.
You know?
Yeah. The don't be afraid to have the discussion,
mm-hmm.
but also have it in a respectful tone, recognizing the fact that you don't experience things the way others experience it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And it just does that level of like respect in today's world anyway feels like it is sorely lacking.
Dwindling.
Yeah. It's too bad. It's too bad.
Yeah. How are you supposed to get along with people if you don't show any respect at all?
I know. And these guys, these folks we talked to, the fabulous, it was just great. They were just all around, just really genuinely lovely people and really smart and definitely knew the issues within their own community.
Dude, and then the program to get kids prepped.
Yeah.
To go to school.
Yeah, the Portfolio Project.
That is an incredible program.
Awesome. I mean, really, really
great stuff that, that they're producing up there. And to have
that should be replicated across the board for everyone.
And to have an individual like Von Zell, who like looks and talks a lot like these kids who are going to struggle to try and get into these different places.
Yeah.
And he said it himself. He was an athlete from Rainier Beach. So he was taught that a man and a black man act a specific way and respect specific things. And for somebody like him to talk to these kids and tell them you can be smart, you can be driven, I can help you get through college, man,
that's powerful.
That's hugely valuable.
Yeah.
Hugely valuable.
Yeah.
So you got some trivia, some stats, whatever.
I do. So I was looking up information about scholarships.
Okay.
Because, you know, hey, scholarships, we're talking about
them. Yeah.
There are some ridiculously named scholarships out there. Okay. So I just want to throw these at you quick.
Okay, I love it.
Okay, so there's the Zombie Apocalypse Scholarship.
Shut up.
You can get $2,000 for the Zombie Apocalypse Scholarship.
The Zombie Apocalypse?
I don't know how.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know what you need to do to qualify for that, but crying out loud, $2,000.
That's amazing.
Make Me Laugh Scholarship.
Wow.
$1,500.
$1,500?
Yeah. Flavor of the Month Scholarship.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a real thing. These are I looked up Washington State scholarships, so I'm not sure if these are available nationwide, but they're available here.
The Make Me Laugh Scholarship, brought to you nationally. Wow.
By Mr. Haha. Oh,
wow.
And then I thought this one you might like because you love top five, but this is the top 10 list scholarship.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I could get that scholarship. How much is it?
That one's $1,500.
I could have done that.
Yeah.
I do that all day.
You could do that right now.
I could do top 10 right now.
Do it.
Too much pressure.
Don't do it. But I do have some trivia for you.
All right, hit me.
Okay. For students looking to get in touch with their wild side, which of the following is a real scholarship?
Okay.
The Gene Spoden Cat Impersonation Competition Scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
The Chick and Sophie Major Memorial Duck Calling Contest Scholarship.
Okay.
I know, right? The Kurt and Alvin Rogers Memorial Chipmunk Catching Contest Scholarship. Mm-hmm. And Myers Look Like a Horse Academic Award.
I'm going to go with B. The memorial duck calling.
Yeah, that's actually true. Nice.
Ha!
Good call.
I knew it. Anything with memorial in it feels like that's a scholarship.
That's legitimate.
Yeah.
Then I'm going to add that to everything.
Yes, you should.
The Heather Lucas Memorial Buy Me a New Car Scholarship.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, sometimes scholarships are offered for specific body traits.
Okay.
Which of the following is not real? The Tall Club's International Scholarship for Women 5'10 or Men Over 6'2.
Okay.
The National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance Health at Every Size Scholarship.
Okay.
The Kelly and Chrissy Scholarship for Blonde Students.
Okay.
Frederick and Mary F. Beckley Scholarship for Left-Handed Students.
Left-Handed Students.
That's a real thing.
Yes!
But the answer was
God
which one's
bless
not
you.
Real.
Oh.
Yeah.
Dang it.
I mean, you are left-handed, so that's,
I'm going to go with the not real one, the height one.
That's a real one, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What's the not real one?
The Kelly and Chrissy Scholarship for Blonde Students.
Oh, see, that was going to be my other guess. Yeah. Was the blonde
your
girl thing.
Your third guess out of four?
Yeah. Well, no, to be fair, my first guess was correct if you were asking a different question.
That's true. That is true.
So, suck on that, Lucas.
All right, question three. Which of these spooky scholarships is real and available to students?
Okay.
The Wholesale Halloween Costume Scholarship Award for Best Carved Pumpkin.
Okay.
The Linda's Floral Emporium Academic Award for Excellence in Carnivorous Plants. The Linens and Things Sheet Ghost Award for Best Ghost Costume.
Okay.
Fitness Palace's Annual Zombie Crawl Scholarship.
And you're asking me which one's not?
No, which one is real.
Okay, which one is real? Number B. B.
No. No carnivorous plants, no.
Oh, well, then what is it?
The Wholesale Halloween Costume Scholarship Award for Best Carved Pumpkin.
Oh, Best Carved Pumpkin. Yeah, that
you
makes sense.
It's fairly
innocent.
Pumpkin.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's very timely, though. Like, your pumpkin will rot, man.
Boy, I'm telling you, what are we doing here with these scholarships? This is ridiculous.
Maybe people just have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay, so, last question.
Yes.
Which of the following food scholarships is not real?
Okay.
Okay, not real.
Okay.
National Beef Ambassador Program Scholarship.
Okay.
The Asparagus Club Scholarship.
Okay.
The Baked Potato Appreciation Group Scholarship. Or the Vegetarian Resource Group Scholarship. Not real.
Not real. So I feel like vegetarian's out because the vegetarians have to have their own scholarship.
Right.
Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
You know when someone's a vegetarian.
Vegetarians. You have to have your own things all the time. Your own food that's healthier than what I eat.
Whatever, Cheetos or vegetarian. and delicious.
What was the first one?
National Beef Ambassador Program Scholarship.
I feel like that's got to be one because of the cattle ranchers and stuff.
Okay.
I'm going to say the baked potato.
Oh, you got it right.
I did?
Yeah, you did.
The baked potato's the one?
Baked potato appreciation group scholarship is not real. I think maybe because it's an appreciation group. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I am surprised at the asparagus angle.
Yeah, the Asparagus Club scholarship is a real club.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Maybe it has to do with, like, you know, where asparagus grows, kids in those regions, right. They get scholarships if they, pick it on the side of the road or something.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. All right, shout out to asparagus growers.
Woo-hoo.
Tune into the show anytime you like. So that was our fabulous interview with the United Negro College Fund. Thanks again to everybody who from that organization who was a part of it. It was just really fun. We could have actually talked for days with them.
Very true.
Just give you a sense of like some of the things that have happened over the last couple weeks since we last talked to you, and then also some upcoming events. Memorial Day happened this last Monday, and it was pretty cool. When I say we, there was a bunch of volunteers from the CFD and some Secretary of State volunteers who came out and served muffins and coffee to the Vietnam veterans and their families who were honoring the fallen at that particular memorial. Always a really fun thing to do and really neat to connect with those type of people. We also have a couple of slots still left available for Podcast for Good for those charities that are listening and are interested. Civility in the Media, which I really want.
We need civility in the media.
Yes, we need civility in the media.
Step one.
Yeah.
Be civil.
Yes.
Step two.
Yeah. But I really, really think this is an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
And there's got to be someone out there who wants to talk about this.
Yeah. Any media-related
charity.
Any
media-related
charity.
TVW.
Oh.
Ah, look at that. And then another one that's really interesting to me that has not been filled is World AIDS Day.
Yeah.
So if you're a charity that deals in either one of those two areas, please reach out to us, and we can get you a slot. The final thing is campaign leader trainings for those listening to us who are volunteers. So it's June 6th, June 13th, and June 19th.
Yeah.
In various locations. So make sure you go to the website to check out those particular locations.
Yeah.
But that is it for this particular podcast. We really appreciate everybody listening to this one. It was really an incredible conversation, so we're glad you could be a part of it. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.